Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Right now, there are loopholes in the law that let people avoid background checks if they buy a gun privately from another party, if they buy a gun online or at a gun show.
And the bar is so low right now that Congress can be heroes by doing literally anything. Universal background checks, or come up with a better answer. Enforce Obama's executive order that denied mentally ill gun purchases, or a better answer. Reinstate the assault weapons ban, or come up with a better answer. Anything but nothing. Doing nothing is cowardice. Doing something will take courage.
Now, I come from a place where we don't have shootings at this frequency, so it's hard for me to fathom. But it should be hard for everyone to fathom. Gun violence should not be a staple of American life. Some say it's too early to talk about gun control. For those victims last night, it's far too late.
Oh, so just to keep track of the arguments, mass shooting, we have to take care of this hotel check-in issue. and by the way, just to give you an idea of how far away America is from actual gun control, this week, Congress is going to vote on deregulating gun silencers.
To Congress, I would just like to say, are there no steps we can take as a nation to prevent gun violence? Or is this just how it is and how it's going to continue to be? Because when you say, which you always say, now is not the time to talk about it, what you really mean is there is never a time to talk about it. And it would be so much more honest if you would just admit that your plan is to never talk about it.
All right, so those were America's late night comedians. It was pretty funny, right? Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, James Corden, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers. Those were their remarks in the last few nights. And, of course, the assault, the all-out assault against people who believe the Second Amendment should be supported is on. I've asked John Law to join us. You know John well. He's been on so many times with us. I'm so grateful for his expertise. He is the founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center, but I've known John since he was in Chicago as a professor. He's an American economist and a political commentator. He is one of the brave souls who decided to go into stats on what gun control actually did to communities. And trust me, he's been a powerhouse since then. He's written so many books about this, including More Guns, Less Crime, The War on Guns, The Bias Against Guns, and on we could go. And I've asked John to join us this morning. John, it's nice to talk to you again.
Well, it's nice to talk to you also.
You know, John, those are compelling. Listen, in spite of my criticism of these guys, those were compelling statements those comedians made. So I'd like to know what Professor John Lott would say in response.
Well, I mean, they may sound compelling, but they were wrong in many cases. The United States is relatively safe from these mass public shootings. I mean, you look at Europe, whether you look at the period of time during the Obama administration or you look since 1970, the casualty rate from mass public shootings per capita in the European Union is actually higher than it is in the United States. Just look at France. In 1 year, in 2015, they had 4 mass public shootings, which, you know, using the FBI definition of mass public shootings, they had 532 casualties from mass public shootings. Over the entire 8 years of the Obama administration, we had 527. So a country one-fifth the population of the United States had more mass public shootings in 1 year than we had in 8. And, you know, of course, you got other parts there. What people often do is they don't adjust for populations. You compare little countries that have 4 or 5 million people in them or 8 million. But what you have to do is try to take into account the fact that, you have a lot of different levels of population.
Well, I think we have a different kind of population, too, John. I think we've discussed this so many times. I know most of what I know because of you. But it's also true that some countries are, now this is not, it's getting less true for sure, are more monolithic in their population. Like if you go to Japan, I remember when I was there for 3 weeks, 1990, people didn't even, they left their packages and their groceries out in public on their bicycles because there wasn't hardly any theft. They'd send their children off to school in their little uniforms on the subway transportation, little kids by themselves because they didn't have a lot of crime at that time. I don't know what it's like now, but it's a different kind of population where there's more common culture. And do you think that's part of the reason why we have more of a problem here?
Well, as I just said, I don't think we have more of a problem here. So, you know, obviously there's some countries which are even safer, and but most of the world, I mean, Europe, I mean, I was just giving an example with regard to Europe. You know, it's, I think it's just wrong for people just to think that, you know, we rely on the media. If you have a mass public school shooting in you know, Germany, it may get an hour or two of coverage in the United States at most, and then the coverage pretty much disappears. I think few people would know that three of the four worst K-12 school shootings, you know, between Europe and the United States have occurred in Europe, two of those in Germany. So, you know, it's just a question of kind of, you know, having things in perspective here a little bit and,
yes, and
realizing what the total is. People can go to our website at crimeresearch.org and can go and see how common these types of attacks are in other countries.
Let's talk about Stephen Paddock. John, what do we know about, what have you learned? I mean, we've heard all these stats. I could play a clip, you know, on people talking about how many guns and what kind. But as you were, as an expert, as you were hearing those things enumerated, what did you, what stood out to you about his cachet?
Well, I mean, the thing that's amazing is how much this guy had planned on this stuff. I mean, I suppose in some sense it's not amazing. We see, you know, it's very common for these guys to plan these things, you know, a couple years, even in advance on these attacks. But, you know, here this guy, he had ammonium nitrate bomb that he had wired into his car. He had, I don't know the exact number, the news media reports just say simply that he had a lot of explosives at his home. I mean, who knows what his backup plans were in order to try to go and kill people. You know, whether he would have tried to drive his car filled with ammonium nitrate, the same material that was used to go and blow up the Oklahoma City Federal Building with Timothy McVeigh. But, you know, it's quite clear that this guy, if he hadn't been able to get the hotel room that he wanted on the right side of the hotel, he would have gone and tried to do something else. But, you know, I did want to briefly address the other point that was raised in the among the comedians, and that was this claim that, well, we need to do something. And the first thing that everybody's bringing up is these universal background checks. The thing is, it just cracks me up because they can't point to one mass public shooting during the Obama administration or in years prior to at least since 2000 that something like this would have had any impact on any of these mass public shootings. And yet, President Obama, for example, after each and every one of the mass public shootings during his administration that he talked about, would constantly raise this as a solution. You know, you just hope that somebody in the press during one of their press conferences would have asked President Obama, well, you keep on pointing to this as the one and only solution, you know, the main thing that you want to have done. And yet, can you point to one of these attacks that you've talked about where it would have made a difference? We had on Monday morning, we had people going and referring again to these universal background checks. Even before we knew the facts.
Well,
it wouldn't have made a difference here.
I read this morning that Stephen Paddock actually passed the background checks. So
right.
I'm another case in point.
Right. No, but I'm just saying none of these cases would have
did these people obtain a gun through a private transfer, which is what would have been affected by these background checks. You know, after the Alexandria shooting, you had Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe, in an hour after the attack, was, you know, on the airwaves and listing a set of gun control laws that he wanted to have. And the bizarre thing was, because these guys don't wait to find out what the actual facts are, the bizarre thing was he all the laws that he listed that we need to have in order to stop things like the Alexandria shooting, this guy bought the gun in Illinois. And Illinois already had each and every one of the laws that the governor was pushing for.
I heard Stephen Paddock's brother say, and I'm sure you probably heard this too, John, that, hey, I don't know, I didn't, he's never even shot his gun. I don't think he's ever even shot a gun. And I thought that was bizarre. Could you possibly have had all of these guns and have executed, literally, what he executed, people and otherwise, the mission, without having some skill at shooting? Could an unskilled shooter, untrained, you're really unfamiliar with how to operate a gun, actually do what he did?
Probably. I mean, look, this guy was shooting into a crowd of 22,000 densely packed people. It's not like this guy had to be an expert shot or even a moderately reasonable shot in order to cause lots of harm that was there. He just had to point the gun in the general direction and fire. But look, the bottom line is this brother obviously didn't know a lot was going on in his brother's life. And that's not uncommon. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is that people are always talking about mental health, and we have to go and spend more money on mental health in order to stop these types of things. But, you know, if you look at, let's say, just during the Obama administration, 60% of the mass public shooters during the Obama administration were people who were actually seeing mental health care professionals prior to their attack. And yet not one single case were these mental health care experts able to identify these individuals as either a danger to themselves or a danger to anybody else. In fact, there's a whole literature, academic literature in the area of psychology and, that goes and tries to grapple with the fact that they're just not good at all in trying to predict these individuals who might be violent like this. But, you know, you're talking about people who have mental illnesses are generally less likely to be violent than the general population. They're also more likely to be victims themselves of violent crime. And, you know, so it's not too surprising, given how rare these types of things are in terms of the number of people involved, that, you know, they're looking at the vast majority of people that they have, which would never even think of doing something like this, and it's just hard for them to figure out who might do it. But the fact is, since these experts can't identify it, it's not incredibly shocking that somebody who you're talking to over the phone, like the brother here, simply wasn't able to have enough information to make that judgment with regard to his brother.
I guess not that it matters what I think, but I just felt the brother's comments really suspicious on a number of levels. I didn't feel he was being genuine. He surely must know. Would think this girlfriend is certainly going to know something about the guns. How could he hide the guns in their home without her knowing that?
Well, how could he hide? I mean, look, this guy must have spent a lot of time going and building the bomb in his home. You know, wiring his car with ammonium nitrate. I would imagine that she, you know, had a pretty good idea what was going on with that stuff, and we'll find out. But look, maybe he is lying. Maybe he has an incentive to go and say, well, you know, I had some questions with Dallas, but I just didn't push it or whatever, because here you have 59 people who have been killed. And, you know, why he doesn't want to be complicit in that in any way. So he could be self-serving on it. I mean, I just don't know what's going on in this brother's mind. But all I can say is it's not impossible for me to believe that just like these mental health experts that may be seeing these people regularly. I mean, you have nationally recognized experts who can't identify this stuff. The guy, Elliot Rodger, the person who did the Santa Barbara stabbings and shootings, he was seeing one of the top mental health care experts in the country in Los Angeles. And yet that person wasn't able to identify him as a risk himself or others.
John, we have to take a break. Can you stay with me just a few minutes more? I want to ask you about what's going on in Congress now. Do you have a minute more?
Sure.
Okay. Dr. John Lott is our guest. It's crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org, if you want to get the actual stats. John is an economist, so he deals in facts and figures. And that's most, he quantifies his thoughts with reality. Some I give a lot of opinions, but actually John is very careful about the stats that he gives. And when we come back, Congress now is wrestling with this, and there is part of what happened with this shooter that might be an area where there might be some agreement. I'll ask John about that on the other side of the break. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The 8-year assault on your Second Amendment freedoms has come to a crashing end. You came through for me, and I am going to come through for you.
I know when he ran, the power of the NRA, the money of the NRA, but maybe he can have a bit of a reawakening. Because of the horror of what happened as he goes to Las Vegas.
I don't think talking about gun issues right now is the right time.
Ending gun violence isn't political. This is personal.
Have you, your experience of your own and what you saw in Las Vegas, has it changed how you feel about any of that?
I think it's fortified it.
All right, that was Steve Scalise in the last part of that clip. Sandy Rios back with you. And, of course, the gun battle now will ensue on Capitol Hill again. And one of the things, you know, among the critics, of course, are Hillary Clinton, who is quick to come out and say that, imagine the deaths if the shooter had a silencer, which the NRA wants to make easier to get. Our grief isn't enough. We can and must put politics aside, stand up to the NRA, and work together to try to stop this from happening again. John Lott is my guest with CrimeResearch.org, Crime Prevention Center. He's the founder. He's an economist who quantifies the effect of the ability to carry guns has on various cultures around the world. And so, John, now we go back to Congress again. And what's this whole business about the silencer that Congress is considering?
Right. Well, before I get into that, I'm listening to the clips that you have there. You talk about the power of the NRA. I just mentioned, if you look from 2013 to 2016, Michael Bloomberg himself made donations to federal candidates who are running for office of over $48 million. Over that same period of time, the NRA made donations of $2.1 million. And the differences for state legislative races are even stronger. You have state Senate and House races. You have state Senate races where Bloomberg will put in $1 million or more into just one race. The NRA doesn't have those types of resources. The $1 million would be equal to half the amount of money donated by the NRA to all federal candidates, along the one state Senate race. So, if money was what made the difference, the gun control advocates would be running roughshod over everything, and this notion that somehow the NRA is paying off people just isn't, it's just rhetoric. It just isn't serious.
And John, to this particular shooting, Stephen Paddock has been described, as a wealthy guy by various accounts. If he had not wanted to go through legal channels to get his guns, he could have still he had the money to procure them. Would imagine.
People, you don't have to be wealthy to be able to procure guns illegally. Look, you go to any college campus. I've given lots of talks at college campuses, and you were to ask students, do they know how to obtain illegal drugs? They're going to snicker because all of them know how to be able to do it. But people don't have to understand is the very same drug gangs that go and supply the drugs are the same ones that supply illegal guns. I mean, we have to understand that the vast majority of violent crime in the United States is gang-related, is drug-gang-related. The Obama administration estimated that in communities up to 80% of crime generally was gang-related, and the vast majority of that was drug-gang-related. And so, you know, if I were to go and click my fingers and cause all illegal drugs to disappear from the United States and all guns, how long would it take for illegal drugs to start coming back into the United States? If I live in El Paso, maybe 20 minutes. And how long is it going to take for those gangs to be able to bring in the weapons that they need to protect that valuable property? I mean, this is really valuable stuff. They can't go to the police and say, look, this other gang stole our drugs. Can you help us get them back? They have to go and essentially set up their own militaries to go and do the fighting there. And the problem is that, you know, all these different types of laws that they're trying to push, like universal background checks, if they really believe that they're going to be more successful in stopping gangs from getting guns than they've been from stopping these gangs from being able to get illegal drugs, good luck. But, I mean, it's kind of like thinking, well, if I just have a background check for you to be able to buy drugs, they'll stop illegal drugs from coming into the United States. I mean, it's just not serious thought on this stuff. The people who bear the cost from this are basically the law-abiding citizens. You have this universal background check that we've heard multiple times in the clips that you played at the beginning. You know, in Washington, D.C., where I'm at right now, it costs $175 to privately transfer a gun because of those checks. You can find it cheaper in other places. You can find it, let's say, as cheap as $55 in Oregon to be able to do that. But whether it's $55 or $175, that's a real cost. It may not stop you or I or many of your listeners, let's say, from being able to own a gun for self-defense. But the very people that my research finds that benefit the most from having guns for protection, poor minorities, particularly poor blacks who live in high-crime urban areas, you know, $100 may make the difference between whether or not they're going to be able to legally obtain a gun to be able to protect themselves and their families. And so when they say, let's do something, you know, the problem is that some of the stuff that they want to do problems for a lot of people. Now, they can fix these things, but the thing is, I've been arguing for 15, 16 years with Democrats about this, and they have no desire to fix this stuff. I mean, for example, I would say, look, if you really believe these background checks reduce crime, and I've just talked about it, I don't believe that that's the case, but if you really do, then it reduces crime for everybody, not just the people who are legally buying the guns and going out of their way to make sure that they obey the law. And if you believe that, then since everybody benefits, make everybody pay for this, pay for it out of general revenue. But I guarantee you, every time I've brought that up, the Democrats just go nuts. And it just has convinced me over time that their goal isn't to get these laws passed, because it would be much easier if they made a couple small, reasonable fixes like that. But they don't want to make reasonable fixes. They want to make it more costly. I'll just give you one quick example, and I can give a lot of these. But in 2013, when Colorado was passing its background checks on private transfers, I got called from state legislators, and they're asking me what amendment would I suggest. And my suggestion was to put up an amendment that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax that they were imposing there on transferring guns. With the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state house, every other Democrat voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax on transferring guns. I mean, how many taxes can you think of that Democrats will fight tooth and nail against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay? And as I said, there are lots of examples like that, but it indicates to me that these guys view these costs as the future, not a bad thing with regard to these laws that they're passing. And mainly why they're pushing these things is to have these costs and to discourage people from having guns for protection.
You know, when I tell you something interesting to me, we have two congressmen who've been shot in the last few years and nearly killed. And one was Gabby Gifford and one was Steve Scalise. And when asked, though, their responses to their own personal shootings are polar opposites. Gabby Gifford, right. Of course, with her husband, is all about, you know, removing guns and making it impossible to get them. And Steve Scalise says, if anything, he is more committed to the Second Amendment than he was before. How do you explain that, John?
Well, I mean, I think it had a lot to do with how they viewed the world to begin with. But Steve Scalise's case, you had like six congressmen at least that are publicly saying that they had concealed handgun permits and that they regularly carry. You had multiple staffers there who had concealed carry permits, but they weren't able to carry there with them in Virginia because of the fact that D.C. has these crazy laws that essentially ban people from being able to go and carry permanent concealed handguns, particularly if you're not a resident there. And even the ones who are residents, it's like 124 permits that they've given out. And so being law-abiding, they obeyed the restrictions there. And, and they couldn't carry it back through the district either because, you know, to go back to work afterwards. And so they were essentially disarmed as a result of that law. That made them easier targets. You know, one of the staffers that I talked to was like 30 feet away from the attacker when he started his attack.
Oh, boy.
He could have easily, he had the proper training for those exact types of instances. And yet he was disarmed because he had obeyed the law because he didn't want to go and break the law carrying his gun through D.C.
Yeah, so they were just sitting ducks. And, you know, I'd contrast that with the shooting in the church recently where this young usher actually stopped the shooter, went out to his car and got his own gun and stopped it. It could have been so much worse. I think that's the dialogue that gets lost on media. They just don't talk about anything like that. They don't even report it, as you have documented time after time. John, let's talk about
If you go to our website at crimeresearch.org, we have lists of mass public shootings, dozens of them that have been stopped, just like the Tennessee case there. I mean, the guy had no other option. The Somali who was doing the attack was a bodybuilder, huge guy compared to this usher that was there. The usher tried to take him on physically, had been pistol whipped, was bleeding profusely. The only way he was able to stop him was by going out to his car and getting his permanent concealed handgun and coming back in.
We only have 2 minutes left, and I promised that we would discuss Congress. I know they're considering the silencing. They're also considering, I think, at least there's talk about considering that device that enables you to make your gun automatically fire as opposed to semi-automatic. What do you think is going to happen with those, John? Just 2 minutes here.
Well, I mean, there's probably better people tied into politics than I am. But my understanding is that the silencer bill is dead right now because of this thing. I mean, it looked like it was going to pass easily. The reciprocity bill that would have protected Steve Scalise and had been that attack, I hope, precisely because they want to try to do something positive to stop these types of things, they'll reconsider it. I mean, people say, well, do something. Well, this is something positive you can do, is make it so that people like Scalise and the other congressman that he was with and the staffer would have been able to go and defend themselves. I mean, they say do something. Well, this is something that actually makes sense as opposed to the universal background checks where they can't point to anything that would have been stopped as a result of having passed that law. And there are real costs for having that law. And, you know, so here's the problem, and that is the fear that the Republicans have is that Democrats will put all sorts of poison pill amendments on it. I could go and talk to you for a whole show saying, great, I hope they do, because I have lots of amendments like what we were talking about before. Who pays for these background checks? If you really believe this is great, and the important thing is, in your mind, to reduce crime to the gun control advocates, then let's have everybody pay for it. The Democrats will fight. I guarantee you. I've talked to these guys for decades. They will fight tooth and nail against paying for that on revenue because they want the individual poor gun buyer to bear the entire cost of trying to obtain a gun. And so obtain these fees that the government imposes. And so you have a few amendments like that, and if they vote it down, then they'll say, well, let's just pay for this for people below the poverty level. And Democrats will fight against that. Let's embarrass them for having, you know, making it clear that their real goal is just to make it costly for people to have guns. When they go and talk about these reasonable regulations, they're just really trying to disarm people.
And, John, I think we need to make the point in the last seconds here that totalitarian governments around the world have notably taken away the guns of their people, their weapons, so that they could not resist. And I think that's in the back of a lot of Americans that are aware of this, a back of our minds, that we must be able to maintain. Our founding fathers understood that they needed the right to carry their weapons because they were abused by King George. I had no defense. And so this is why our country has a Second Amendment, so that we can be independent and protect ourselves. Dr. John Lott is the founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Also, you can go to crimeresearch.org for all the information that he just spoke about, the stats, the stories. It's a great resource. John, thank you so much for joining us today. And God bless you. Talk to you soon. Thank you. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.